Happy to have you here this evening for the session entitled It's Okay to Be Old. My name is Glenn Gronlund. I'm from Minneapolis. As John indicated earlier, I'm with the Ebenezer Society, and I'd like to share something about that in a bit. I don't know if you know Helena Rubinstein. Does anyone know who she is?
What?
She does something, or I don't even know if she's still living.
No.
She's dead, but something with beauty cosmetics. This is what she said. Work has indeed been my beauty treatment. I believe in hard work. It keeps the wrinkles out of the mind and the spirit. It helps keep a woman young. It certainly keeps a woman alive. Someone has also said, I think it was Sig Olson, that everyone needs a place to come to get the wrinkles out of their soul. And I think that's maybe what this place is all about, to get the wrinkles out of our soul. What we're going to be talking about tonight is aging and being old. I would like to see tonight as very much of an overview of what I'll be doing this week. However, I know that some of you will only be here this evening, and because of that, I'd like to make it meaningful for you. At the same time, I think some things we'll refer to tonight we'll go into greater depth on later in the week when we take up topics such as how to pick a nursing home for an older friend or parent or even oneself, also dealing with some of the issues that are facing aging people in the 80s, and there are some very significant ones that I think we'll need to deal with. One evening this week we'll have a forum when you will have a chance to really conduct the evening. I will say a few words to start it off, and hopefully we can have a good discussion again on some of the theological ethical issues around aging, such as death and dying. Tonight my hope would be that we will have discussion, but I'll say a little more tonight than I would at a forum. Then also one of the sessions will be dealing with the myths and stereotypes of aging. And along that line, I would like to indicate to you at the outset also two resource books that are both in the bookstore that I hope are substantive and can reinforce some of the things we'll be talking about. One is written by the gentleman who conducts a TV show. Does anyone know Hugh Downs' TV show?
Yeah.
That's one, and then there's another one.
Over Easy.
Over Easy has the largest viewing audience, five-day show, of any show on television. And Hugh Downs, whom I was with, and I'll share some of that as we visit tonight and during the week on Friday in Minneapolis, will be leaving that show, regrettably, and Frank Blair will be taking his place. But Hugh will stay on the show and bring a commentary. But this is a very good book, 30 Dirty Lies About Old. It deals with some of the myths and stereotypes that we'll be dealing with on another evening. And then this little book, entitled Everybody's Studying Us. And this is written by an elderly person who takes a humorous bunch of shots at this whole phenomenon of aging. And it's filled with cartoons, but also a variety of quotes and some things that she's written. And I think you'll find it very interesting. So those are the two resource pieces that we'll be using during the week. One other book that I didn't put down for the bookstore to handle, but I think one of the best inspirational books, is entitled The Time of Your Life, Reflections on Growing Old, published by Winston Press. And if any of you would like to see it later, feel free to come up and you may want to thumb through it. It has quotes like Helena Rubinstein, and other people have some short articles and some rather graphic photographs, the time of your life. At Ebenezer Society, I should say also that I am not directly engaged in providing care to older people. I'm really, as a Lutheran clergyman, I'd have to say I'm not in chaplaincy either, but I am involved in the management of Ebenezer. Our organization is owned by 47 Lutheran congregations, serves all people, obviously, in the Hennepin County, Dakota County area of Minneapolis. We have approximately 1,000 apartments and a variety of programs in housing for elderly persons. We serve approximately 1,500 people in their own home, and that really is the area that we've had difficulty funding, but we have the greatest commitment to homemakers, home health aides, visiting nurses, daycare, etc. And we're not here to talk about Ebenezer, as John already indicated, but that's something that we might want to visit about as we spend time together. Then we also have nursing homes. We have 6 nursing homes and all levels of care, and I think there we serve about 850 people. We have a center for aging that I serve as director of that entity. It conducts research, applied research, in the field of aging, and we also engage in consulting, working with clients around the country in about 35 cities and 14 states nationally to help them as they wish to design programs or evaluate programs they may have serving the elderly. The two areas of our program that are most innovative and that will impact some of what I will be sharing with you, I should identify. One is called 7500 York. It's the first of its kind in the nation. It's a cooperative housing project funded by HUD, Housing and Urban Development. We have 500 people in that complex. And the value of the concept, we believe, is essentially in the thought or the principle of self-determination, whereby older people can own their unit, can build up equity. We do not believe in life care or any form of life care. They build up equity in their initial deposit plus their monthly payment. This program, we think, because the people govern it themselves, they own it, is a model that, in fact, is worth exporting. And we are working now with other parts of the country to build cooperatives for elderly. They need not be as large as the one that we have. In fact, we're now working with a model wherein it would contain enough units for about 20 units. So there would be in that unit maybe 35 to 40 people. The other area that we've done some work in that I think is a preliminary probe into something that we'll see more of is we've purchased a hospital, and we will be converting the hospital into a new level of care called specialized skilled care. And this program is for the frail elderly or for the old elderly. People who have a greater dependency than most and need many of the support services that would not be available in the average nursing home and that, as you know, are extremely expensive in a hospital. And under Medicare, you, of course, cannot stay in a hospital if the doctor indicates that you no longer need the care being provided and you have a day or two to find another place to stay. Well, what we're looking at in our program is to create a new level of care, specialized skills, where the nursing hours, for example, for the residents will be 5.5 nursing hours per day per resident. The average care in a skilled facility, which up to now has been the highest level of nursing care, is 2.9 nursing hours per day per resident. So you can see the difference. I think that's enough about Ebenezer, but I wanted to share a bit of an overview, identify the resource books, and help you see and realize what we'll be dealing with. In case we don't cover your topic this evening, you'll know that this is somewhat of an introduction. Today we have, in the United States, 10% of our population is over 65. We have 23 million people who are over 65, increasing at well over 1,000 per day. We have, by the year 2000, anticipated demographics of 32 to 33 million people over age 65, which at the present projections will mean 12 to 13% of our population. Ronald Reagan recently was quoted in the Minneapolis Tribune when he gave a speech. I guess I can refer to the candidates now that the election has already taken place. There's no lobbying there of any kind. Ronald Reagan gave a speech on Social Security. And in that speech, it was explained that the reason he was giving it is because of the large voting block of elderly people. Well, that's true, and that's the demographics of what we're dealing with in this next 20-year period is very significant when it comes to political decisions, power groups, and all the rest. But there are some other facts that we need to have straight before we begin, and in order to do that, I'd like to give you a little quiz tonight. No one can fail this quiz, so you don't have to be anxious about it. I have about seven questions I'd like to share with you, and they're true and false. Now, my kids at school, our children always hate a true and false test, but at least it may open up some communication for us here, some discussion. If you have a pencil and something to scribble on, it may be helpful. If you don't, you can remember and be very honest about what the answer is that you give, and you won't change your answer when I indicate to you what the correct answer is, I'm sure. Okay, let me see if I can give you an example. This would be true-false, and I'd like to go through them, and then we'll talk about them, come back to them. So if you could hold on your comments until we get to that. First question, senility among older persons is increasing. Senility among older persons is increasing. True or false? Secondly, most nursing homes in the United States are non-profit. Most nursing homes in the United States are non-profit. True or false? Third, the greatest increase in any age group as to the percent of population in our country is in the age group 65 to 75. Tom, what I said before now, you know, I gave you the answer when we were visiting, so you're out of that question. The greatest increase of the various age groups in the United States population, percent of increase, is in the age group 65 to 75, true or false? Next, old people are generally poor. Old people are generally poor. Who knows what the poverty level is now in the United States as defined by the government? Anyone know? And for a single person, it's about, I think, somewhat over $5,000. That, anyone know a different fact? Okay, so what we're saying is that old people are generally in that income bracket of about $5,000 a year. True or false? Old people are generally poor. All I was doing was defining what poor is. Okay, the next one any form of major loss ages a person. Any form of a major loss ages a person. What would be a major loss?
Death?
Jim?
Grandmother.
Oh, okay. I think loss of a spouse, loss of health. Also, what other losses? Loss of home. Very, very significant loss. Loss of through divorce. Loss of income. Loss of job. Okay, the question was, any form of major loss ages a person. Next one. Aging begins at age 45 to 50. Aging begins at age 45 to 50. And lasts 5% of the elderly, people over 65, are in nursing homes. 5% of the elderly are in nursing homes. Okay, let's work backwards. 5% of the elderly are in nursing homes. True or false? How many thought that was true? Okay. How many think that's false? Well, the group's about split. It's true. 95% of people over 65 are independent. However, of that 95%, about 5% are cared for by children or by their mate. In other words, if they didn't have family to help them, they would probably need some type of formal care. But in the United States, 5%, in fact, if we were very specific, the figures see around 4% are actually in some type of residential institutional nursing care. So 95% of the elderly, and certainly 90% if we discount that group being cared for by a spouse, are independent, very similar to the seniors that we have at Holden during this month of September. They're just like us. Okay, the other one, aging begins at age 45 to 50. How many said that was false? Okay, well, it is false. Obviously, aging begins when? Okay, any form of major loss ages a person. True or false? How many said true? Yeah, that is true. And I think the aging process, as we're all aware, begins at the time you're born, and of course it occurs throughout life. But, as we were indicating earlier, if I have to move from my home and to another city, and that's not something I'm doing voluntarily, I'm doing it because my daughter wants me near her, that is a loss. What's the biggest loss in that move? Lots of friends. Lots of friends. The only person you have to call you is your daughter. Whereas in the other place, you had all kinds of friends who could have called and inquired and checked in to see how you were. Okay? Loss of hearing. Loss of eyesight. More than half of the people who have vision problems are over 65. Who have significant vision problems over 65. Significant loss of vision and of hearing can age a person more rapidly than if you have do not have that loss. Any disability does have an effect on a person. Now, aging is not a negative in the sense that it's sort of a one-way track that is leads to death. It simply means that it accentuates what is normally going on in a person in terms of aging because of that loss. You've seen it in people who have lost a spouse, or you may have experienced it yourself. There is a period of depression, of trauma, that that is painful. Now, if you have friends, if you have a support system that can undergird you through that time, it's very possible to see beyond it and live on with a meaning to your life. But loss does do that. Old people are generally poor. How many felt that was true? Okay, how many felt it was false? Well, I think your vote is indicative of where most of society is at. We've had a number of publications recently, not least of which was the Saturday Review of Literature, that some of you may have read, that wrote a rather devastating article, in my opinion, and showed something we'll be talking about later in the week, and that is severe ageism. Discrimination against a person because they're old, because that article suggested, on the basis of studies of people in Florida, that old people, contrary to what has been said, are really pretty well off. And that is a lie. The fact of the matter is that a significant number of older persons are very poor. Have very low. Well, it's difficult to. We have 60s statistics, 70s statistics, and we're waiting for 80. I can just tell you on the basis of our experience, and others have had the same one, there is a housing program available now called HUD-202. It's housing for the elderly. And it's called Section 8. Well, that's not what it meant in the war. But Section 8 is for poor people. And in that housing project, you would only pay 25% of your income for rent. So if the fair market rent was, as it is in our city, $450 for a two-bedroom, and your income was $4,000, or let's say your income was $1,000 a month, you'd pay $250 a month for that $450 apartment, and the government pays the difference. We opened up, in fact, it was dedicated yesterday, 200 units in Minneapolis of that type of housing, and we had about 800 applicants. And that's been repeated throughout the country. So I don't have the statistic other than to know it is significant. That's not to say there aren't elderly people who have adequate incomes, but there are a large number of elderly people who have low incomes.
What is the low income?
By the definition of this housing program, it's anything under $11,000 a year. And poverty is defined at about five, so it's somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000. I would say, though, that and I'm referring now to the area I know best, to live in Minneapolis if you're 65, and $5,000 a year is very difficult. Very difficult. And we have a significant number of people that we have worked with who are in that income level. Now, there are others who have more income than that. But to live on $400 a month is very difficult, very difficult. Now, if you live in a rural area, you have your own garden, can grow your own food, etc., again, that enters in. So I'm referring to an urban scene, which is different also. Please.
Who compiled a figure of 11,000 for
individuals? Well, that's set by the Department of Housing and Urban Renewal. And that's set for, essentially, that figure is set for the urban area.
Isn't that for a couple of them? Is that for an individual?
No, that's for an individual. That's the maximum you can have. And that was raised just very recently, Chuck. It was about $2,000 below that. It was, I think, around $9,200, and they raised it just within the last, I think, 7-8 months. I think the thing that's happened, and
That's why it is becoming increasingly difficult for people on fixed incomes, is that the inflationary explosion has been harmful, although Social Security has. There are individuals who have other sources of income, like a small railroad pension or something, that haven't always kept up with inflation, and so the spendable money they have is not taking them as far as it did earlier. But I think that the definitions of poverty, the way I stated it here, are old people are generally poor. I think that it's been my experience. That is not to say there aren't those that are well off. I think we'll also see in a couple of the other questions we raised, and I think you know that to be a fact too. It's not only a question of what do you have at age 68. It's increasingly true that individuals are living to be 88 and 98. And what was considerable income at age 68 isn't at age 98. And if one of the party in the couple needs to go into a nursing home, and in many areas, as you know, that is at the cost of about $18,000 a year. It's not at all unusual in major areas, $50 a day. What I'm saying is it's depleted. Of the 850 people we have in our nursing facilities, 60% of those folks are on welfare. Now, these are hardworking, Northern European, generally Scandinavian people. These are not people who, by any stretch of the imagination, ever wanted or thought they'd have to be on public welfare, but they have nothing left. When we talk about people over 65, we're talking about all people over 65. Those people are very poor. Jim?
How many nursing homes do you have around the country?
We have six in Minneapolis.
Yes.
And we only have...
Is that around the state?
No, just in Minneapolis.
Just in Minneapolis.
Yeah, yeah. Just in one county.
Just in one county, that's Hudson County?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, sir.
The greatest increase in the percent of population is between the ages, and any age group is between the ages of 65 to 75. How many said that was true? How many said it was false?
I'm here.
Greatest increase is in the age group 85 and on up. 45% increase in the past year. There are nearly 2.5 million people over age 85 in this country. So you understand, I said percent of increase, so the numbers aren't, you know, that graphic, but that group is growing the fastest of any age group that we have. Yeah, I think it already is to some degree, but definitely. So the older person, grandparent, friend, yourself, who is in their 90s and alert and active and functioning, is still unique, but not as unique as it was when your mother was 90.
Mm. How long will a Social Security be able to finance?
The question that was asked was, to what effect is that going to have on Social Security, and how long will Social Security be able to continue? We will be getting into this as one of the major issues later in the week, but that is a very, very critical question. What is beginning to, a couple things are beginning to happen. One is, it seems we can't get a straight message from anybody who's supposed to know whether Social Security is solvent or not. I don't know what your papers say. 1 week it's solvent, and the next week it's about ready to go under. And I'm not sure if anybody knows where it's at. And that's very frightening, because these people who may have incomes of $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a year and are getting along all right are also individuals who are the major source of that income in Social Security. If that were gone, it may be very difficult. The other thing we're seeing, which concerns many of us, is a growing animosity from the middle-aged person toward the older adult. And why is that? And what happened in the last 2 years? That's right, our Social Security tax went right through the roof. And because of that, there's some animosity that I think we're all concerned about and need to find ways to discuss, get out in the open, and get the facts on. For example, slightly over 25% of Social Security doesn't go to old persons at all. And those middle-aged people need to understand that. It goes to age-dependent children, it goes to a lot of other things. But I don't know that there is an answer to the question other than to say that it is something that is a growing concern, and that is, with people living as long as they are, how viable will Social Security be for them? We will also need to address retirement age, not whether it's 65 or 70, but the fact that someone my age probably will not be able to retire in the sense of not having a job to generate income. That probably will need to continue working because there will not be the resources to support me 65 at a lifespan that could be a normative of 83 for a male. Any other questions or comments on Social Security? I'm sure that we won't fully cover that topic tonight, but it is an issue. Yeah, Tom? I don't know. Does anyone know what... I know that they're not paying into Social Security. And they get their pension from that.
Yeah, they don't draw from it either.
But isn't there a little game that has gone on?
What they classify as a double dipper.
Yeah, that's getting two government pensions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
one military perhaps and one something else.
If they work for a period of time, then they could also get Social Security.
$7.25 is the minimum amount.
Yeah.
Yeah, we put in $100 and then they draw the minimum.
And that's created some animosity.
That's an abuse.
Because that's a drain on the system for the rest of us who have paid in for 50 years.
Might have a military pension on top of that. That's called triple dipping.
Right. Well, another difference is that Social Security is to some extent an income redistribution system. The federal pension system is not. That is...
That's a straight annuity?
Well, the people getting Social Security include those at very low income levels who contributed to it. And by and large, the federal payroll doesn't include those very low income levels.
Mm-hmm.
So that, but everybody gets the same amount of Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a support of poor people in Social Security is missing
in the civil service. Most nursing homes are non-profit. How many felt that was true? How many felt that was false? Most nursing homes are for-profit. There are 22,000 nursing homes in the United States, and of that total, about 5,000 are non-profit. The majority are for-profit, proprietary homes. When we talk about how to pick a nursing home, on Friday morning, we'll talk a little bit about the advantages of non-profit over against for-profit nursing home. But the fact is, majority today are for-profit. Senility is increasing among older persons. True or false? True? False. Majority false. Okay. That is false. Senility is a concern that Hugh Downs addresses in his book and other spokesmen now who are a part of increasing the public consciousness among all age groups as to the facts of aging are addressing. Chronic brain syndrome, which is a physical deterioration of the brain, which in jargon sometimes is called senility, is a fact. It is no more prominent in people over 65 than it is in children. So the likelihood of having chronic brain syndrome or deterioration of the brain if you are over 65 is no more likely there than when you were 10. It's as prevalent in the younger age groups as in the older. However, senility is a misused term in our society in that often a person who is confused or disoriented is referred to as being senile. That is evidence of our ageism, of our discrimination against older persons. It is not senility. It's confusion or it's disorientation. If you were to take any one of us here, put us in an institution, take away most of our belongings, take away our personal items, or steal them on occasion, not give us much social interaction, or isolate us, not allow us to change clothes in privacy, but always in the presence of other people, and feed us food that is not particularly stimulating, I would guarantee you that I would become disoriented. And after a while, I wouldn't know if today is Monday or Thursday. Well, there are the three major contributors. One is malnutrition will create disorientation. Secondly is isolation. Loneliness, depression will create it. And third, which we're just beginning to get a better handle on today, I think, is, one thing most older people do is they never throw away a prescription. I'm sure that doesn't apply to this group. But we'll never throw away a prescription just in case you ever get that back again. Then, you know, it cured. And so it's a little humorous, but it's very serious because people take multiple pills and they contradict or create problems with one another and you have evidence of senility. Which is not senility at all, it's confusion. We have created in our organization in 1970 and now in a number of other places in the country created housing called congregate living. Congregate living means you get one meal a day. Some of you have had experience of it. Or a good meal like the Chelan one, you know, a good, hot, well-cooked meal. And some support services, some type of social support services to encourage interaction. We believe that with that type of environment, a person can, in fact, be kept alert and kept out of a nursing home. And I think the ultimate bottom line to what we're about today, any of us who are providers who come out of a church, a nonprofit, humanistic approach to providing life-giving opportunity for older people, want to keep the person, including oneself, out of a nursing home as long as possible, and if possible, keep them out completely. Because the best nursing home is still dehumanizing, and I think one we happen to have is pretty good, but it is not a conducive environment for life because it takes away so much. So we'll talk more later about senility, but enough to say that it is not something that we all need to worry about or that we're particularly going to get unless it is a situation put upon us. I was listening to a tape today from one of our speakers here at Holden a couple years ago on the topic of aging, and he suggested the best place to build a nursing home was between a zoo and a playground. And I think there's something to that. Yeah, the last truly intergenerational community in our society, in my judgment, is the church, the congregation. And I think we do need to deal with the fact that we are moving in the direction, and our organization has done this to an extent that we have to be very careful of, and that is segregating elderly into environments that put them only with themselves. And it's not a holistic living experience, it's not normative. Now, at the same time, we need to be aware that there are a number of people who have raised large families, that the thing they love about the grandchildren, much as any, is that they have them come, but then what happens is that they also go home. And there is some joy in not having to raise another whole batch of kids. So I don't think we need to suggest that every older person wants kids all over the place, but they want to have availability of social interaction with them. Okay, those are just some openers that I would hope, and I appreciate very much our discussion, and I'm sure we'll have a chance later to get again at the whole disagreement and I think legitimate concern raised on the income point. I'd like to share with you a couple readings at this time and then finish out the time we have together, which isn't very much, giving you a quick overview on what has happened in the White House Conference on Aging, because I think it gives a clue to an emerging new phenomenon that means being old today in this society can be a very enjoyable experience. So I'd like to share a couple readings with you, and maybe I could ask you each to take one of these and then share a few words on the White House Conference, okay? The card, I can't find it, so I have to go wait with that. The card that I passed out makes another point. Age is a process, not a disease. There is prevalent today a myth that I think is gradually becoming less prevalent because of the consciousness raising that many people have undertaken, not least of all the advocate groups such as AARP and Grey Panthers, senior federations, and so forth. And that is that age is not a disease that a physician can cure, but rather it's something that is as normal and expected as anything is in life. Each of us participate in this process as we make individual choices, choices that make our lives unique, one-of-a-kind investments that have never been made before and will never be made again. Getting older begins at birth and continues through accumulated experiences as our days go by. Aging is a total experience in that it contains all of the ups and downs, in and out, good times and bad times, riches and poverty, sickness and health we will ever have. In a very real way, aging is what living is all about. And with this way of looking at it, with a perspective that aging is a now concern for each of us, it is possible to care about aging and those who are aging, whatever our age. We can begin to see changes as a natural sequence of events. We can celebrate what we have been and look forward confidently to what we might become. Most importantly, we can accept and enjoy what we are. People of many ages involved in a process, not a disease. The spirit of aging, I think, is best represented for me in Thomas Murray's quote, and I think I've seen this spirit evident in many of us here. People who never close their minds, who never mentally retire, seldom seem to let down physically or spiritually either. They never lose a kind of childlike appetite for what comes next, and always seem to be listening to a little voice that keeps prodding and pushing them to never miss a sunrise. You're as young, Charles Deegan. You're as young as your mind is young, and not as old as your body is old. You're as young as your mind is young, and not as old as your body is old. And to the young in mind belong the world and the fullness thereof. Physical growth may stop, but mental, spiritual, and creative capacities need not. Dr. Leopold Belloc, age, and this is a, his quote is a significant point that you may have read other places. Age is not a leveler of individual differences. It is the type of personality that you have in the middle years that is most important to success or failure and adapting to aging. People who have always adapted well, who have a flexible psyche and character, are those most likely to adapt well to old age. The cranky, bitchy, unbearable person at 85 was probably cranky and bitchy and unbearable at age 25. Let me, in the few minutes I have left, share with you a phenomenon that's occurred just very recently in the White House Conference on Aging, which will be held a year from this fall, because I think it indicates that we are living in a fortunate time, and now more than ever, in many ways, it's okay to be old. In 1960, the first White House Conference on Aging was held. The mean age of the participants was 40. Older people were spectators in 1960, not participants. The general attitude of that conference, as I've read about it, seems to suggest that aging is sickness and illness, or there's something wrong. In 1970, the last White House conference was held prior to the one coming up. In that conference, gray power was given birth. In that conference, older persons began to have some influence. However, still only 10 years ago, the general mindset was that aging was something that was wrong with the person and that was an illness. The captain of the ship with that attitude of aging is always the physician. And we'll see as we talk further this week, the captain of the ship today for aging is the older person. And that's what's happening in 1980-81. The White House conference is happening right now. Throughout the country, there are forums, there are caucuses, there are group meetings throughout the land. What happens in November in Washington, D.C. will be nothing more than a bringing together of many, many discussions all over the country by older persons where they have identified the issues. The point being this, the key issue that we're facing today in geriatrics and gerontology and aging is the issue of self-determination. Today, older people are beginning, through a variety of means, to have influence and impact over the decisions that influence their lives. AARP is the largest single volunteer organization in the United States. 14 million members. Anyone here belong to AARP? Olaf Kassa is president of that group and is a fine ALC layman and an excellent leader. I think as we visit more, we'll have a chance to see that what we need now are means by which older people can act out their self-determination in order to make what appears to be a bubbling possibility a full reality. Thank you very much for being here this evening.